welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living grid locked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. It is a Thursday, and it is the summertime. And so since it's the summertime, we know that the slow blues are at it again. The blues have, I think, you know, a ton of home games. Basically, like most weekends and most weekdays, the blues have a game a lot of the time over the summer at Sinsheimer. And I met their new play-by-play guy for this summer and thought I'd bring him on, and Seth Smith is here in the studio with us today. How's it going, Seth?
Doing well, Owen. Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me here and putting this together, make it happen.
Yeah. So, and you can get even just a little bit closer if you want to. It's no problem.
You got it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, in terms of what the Blues do, obviously they have players from all over the country who come and they play, summer ball in San Luis in the CCL, the California Collegiate League. We've had Adam Stowe on the podcast before. And along with players the last couple of years, they brought in announcers as well, right? So tell me a little bit about yourself, like where you're from and what you're doing.
Well, you know, I'm very fortunate to get this kind of opportunity. They've been well established. This is now their 70th anniversary. I think 1946 was the first year. So to be able to come up here and be able to spend my summer up in this area and kind of get to know everyone in the organization so far has been great, but going back to your numbers, I think they said this is the most interns they've had in their time, and it's up to, I think, 25 or so for interns.
Uh-huh. So you're basically like a media intern or a communications intern.
Yeah, so I think the title they said was sports information director / broadcaster.
Okay.
So kind of responsibilities are writing game recaps and then as well as doing the broadcast and play-by-play during the game. But I'm originally from Orange County. I've spent the last 4 or 5 years in San Diego, North County, San Diego, San Marcos.
Yep.
I work for Cal State San Marcos. I do the play-by-play there, for all their sports, as well as helping out at UC San Diego, official PA for men's, women's basketball, soccer, baseball, things like that. So, but everything's been down there. This is the kind of first experience I've gotten to be able to come up to San Luis Obispo.
You're from Orange County. Where'd you go to high school?
I went to Mater Dei High School Santa Ana. Okay. I played baseball there. From there, I went to Santa Ana Junior College, played 2 years for Don Sneddon, and then transferred to Cal State San Marcos, played a year. Unfortunately, dealt with a little injury, but allowed me to kind of get started.
Okay. So you're a baseball player. What position did you play when you played?
I was a pitcher and outfield. Okay. For the most part, it was outfield all through high school. I think I pitched a couple games in my 4 years, and then at Santa Ana, kind of transitioned my sophomore year into a little more pitching. Was left-handed, so it just gave me another position to try and play.
Okay, yeah, for sure. A lefty is always a good thing to be in baseball, and Mater Dei is kind of no joke, right, in terms of the league they're in, and for sports, obviously, for basketball especially, is kind of what they're known for, but I'm sure there's baseball and football players that come out of there all the time and that go play at UCLA and USC and all kinds of places, yeah?
Yeah, it was a heck of an experience, to be honest. The way that they rally around their sports there it's crazy, and up and down. I mean, water polo now is one of the best in the state for sure, but just the experience of playing baseball, I mean, we played against the likes of Nolan Arenado, who's arguably one of the best in the game right now, and watching the Cubs game, Kyle Hendricks, we played against him. He went to Capo Valley. I mean, Garrett Cole.
Did Kyle Hendricks pitch for the Blues?
He did. He pitched a summer there. I don't know. He went to Dartmouth after Capo Valley, but I mean, just you name a guy from kind of the California area that's in the big leagues, and more than likely, we played against some Trace Thompson.
Sure.
We got to see Klay Thompson in basketball tear us up as well.
Where did they go to school? Where did the Thompsons go to school?
They went to Santa Margarita, who's also in our league.
Okay.
Garrett Cole played him 2 years. He went to Trevor Maurer, who is the reliever, was with the Padres, I think now with the Mariners or vice reverse, something like that. But
nice.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. It was a good time.
So are you done at San Marcos now? Are you still a student there?
No, I'm done and on the other side of the fence and working for them now.
Okay,
so
cool.
It's a little bit different, but it's been a nice transition.
Yeah, how's that transition been? I mean, when you're a student and you're doing some things and you're kind of getting some experience, that's cool. Then you kind of graduate and it's your job. Has it become different in terms of how you approach it? Or
yeah, in a sense, but at the same time, that W word hasn't been used much. It doesn't feel like work. It still kind of feels like, you know, it's just something I enjoy to do and happen to see a little something from it now. It started out as an internship and I had to put in my work and show up day in, day out and not complain about it. And now it's, you know, it's been nice.
Yeah, I tell people a lot of the time who want advice about kind of what am I going to do after college, like what do something you really like and volunteer or like find a way that you can just be around it so that people can find out who you are and what you're about. And if people can find that out, we have the Dodger game on here and I found out Seth's a Cubs fan. It looks like Baez just knocked a two-run homer against Julio Urias, who's now given up four runs. It's like the fourth inning or something like that. This will be all long gone by the time you hear this, but there you go. I have a Baez story for you later if you want.
Ooh, yeah.
What I was saying is that, you know, people who are looking for things to do, whatever those things are, if you can just find a way to be around those places and if, you know, if you're looking for work in that field, then just being around it is what you need to be, wherever that is and kind of however that is. And it sounds like you've kind of done that at UCSD and at San Marcos and just kind of trying to get everything you can, you know, sports-wise in North County.
Yeah, no, that's kind of been the game plan and just kind of finding out the older that I get is the worst someone can say is no. So it's worth a shot. I mean, I never would have thought to be able to get an opportunity with the Blues. I sent stuff out to a number of teams, heard back, but the Blues was the ultimate goal. And like you said, it's just networking, knowing the right people, getting your foot in the door and just kind of having a positive attitude as you go along the way.
So you've been in San Luis for a week now, maybe a week and a half. You're from Orange County, going to school in San Diego. What are your impressions of San Luis Obispo, first impressions?
I love it. So far, great. People are nice. It's a small little town. I'm all about it. The ma and pa type places, the restaurants, everything's kept the same as I'm sure it was years ago. So I haven't actually seen Cal Poly SLO, so I don't know. Like,
just you haven't been on campus?
I haven't been on campus as far as knowing the campus life, but the outside of it, and was able to check out, you know, the beaches. I went to Avila the other day and plan on just kind of going anywhere that people are sending me. So it's been great.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about the Blues this year. And I know that that you've just called a few games and that they haven't really had their full roster, obviously, because the college baseball season is still going on for a lot of teams. What does that look like for them? I know a lot of years, you know, it could be 2, 3, 4 weeks into the season before they actually get some of the guys that they're getting, or maybe there's some pitchers that they're thinking they're counting on who actually don't end up coming because they get used in the World Series or something, and they're like, we need to shut this guy down. So what does that look like, you know, just kind of overall picture for where the roster is at now and where it's going to be and what the timeline is there?
I think it honestly kind of shows just what type of program and organization that they've put together. That, I mean, we're going to be into 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks into season and still not have their full roster, which, you know, a bad thing, but also a very good thing. It means your players are on really good teams. They're coming from very good programs, well-coached, and they're here for the right reasons. Everyone's coming here to get better and try and play at the next level. I don't think you sign up to come and get recruited to come play for the Blues if that's not really your goal. And, I mean, through the first four games, these kids that they have now, maybe not their full roster, but, I mean, they put up a bunch of runs. The pitching staff was unbelievable. So for not having a full roster, it's a pretty good start for them so far, taking the first four from the Packers, and then starting tomorrow, it'll be a three-game series. But, yeah, I think
tomorrow being Friday night, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they're home against
the Walnut Creek Crawdads.
Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Cool.
So they are a league opponent. Yep. So it'll probably be, I mean, another packed house at Sinsheimer. That's another thing that I played in the CCL. I played for the LA Brewers. Did. Yeah.
Okay.
I played for the LA Brewers.
Now when you played for the LA Brewers, because that's not the team that plays at the Academy, right?
No, that's the MLB
Academy.
Yeah,
Barons.
Academy Barons.
Right. Okay. So where do the Brewers play? Like
when
Cypress?
When I was playing, we were at Hart Park, places like that. J. Sarah High School, which is San Juan Capistrano area.
Right.
But now they are, I believe, at Cypress College.
Okay.
Head coach was Larry Mahoney.
Okay.
Great guy. He's now at Hope International.
Yeah. Cal Poly played them in basketball last year or 2 years ago.
Okay.
Kind of in a preseason game. But so then Sinsheimer, you were saying.
Yeah, just the crowd and the amount of people that show up and actually know what they're rooting for, cheering for. They're not, you know, they don't hear a crack of the bat and assume the ball's out. They actually know if it's playable. I mean, just the intelligence and stuff like that of the fans. And I think opening night had 1,200 people. I mean, every day, even the day games, were getting close to 1,000 per game, and that's remarkable. And like I said, it just kind of shows what this area is about, and it's a nice, tight-knit, close group, it seems like, here.
Yeah, having played in the CCL, and I've never been to another CCL game, but I know some other games, you know, if they get a couple hundred people, they're satisfied with that. Is San Luis the only place like that in the CCL that draws like they draw?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, even you look at Santa Barbara, the Foresters, for, you know, they've been right there keeping pace with the Blues for a long time as well. But
in terms of on the field.
On the field, yes. Right. But off the field, the crowd, it doesn't compare in my mind. If we were lucky to get 50 to 100, it was a packed house for our summer games. I think Palm Springs, they're not in the CCL, but the Palm Springs Power, they're another one. They play at where I forget the name of the stadium, but the Angels
used to play there. I went to an Angels game there one time when I was little, because they used to play in the Cactus League.
Yeah.
But they would play from Palm Springs. So I guess teams would bus it or fly to Palm Springs from Phoenix. I guess it's not that it's far away, but it's not that far away, I guess.
And yeah.
So, yeah, I went to a game there. I remember Dave Parker signed a ball for me for the Angels. Maybe they were playing the Pirates or something like that then. I don't know. Anyway,
yeah.
It was weird.
Other than them, no one else really kind of gives you that big league type experience, you know, at Palm Springs. You get the locker room, you get to go down the steps, into the dugout, stuff like that. And here it's same type thing. They got promotions going on between every inning. They're giving away stuff all the time. And like I said, they just pack the house every night, which is pretty fun. And I mean, I'd around and the teams that I played, I haven't seen another venue like this.
Quite like that. Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're big supporters of the Blues, obviously. I took pictures there for them last year, and certainly, you know, it's a fun thing to do with a family. It's a fun place to go. I want to get into a little bit more of you as a player. You said you got injured. How'd you get injured? What happened?
I tore my rotator cuff.
Oh,
so
yeah. That'll
do it. Instead of, it wasn't one big major tear, it was, you know, a number of micro tears as
progressive.
Well as, yeah, as well as scap problems. So I rehabbed and did that for a little bit, and I didn't really see much improving, and I was fine where I was at as far as if I did want to hang it up, I was completely content with doing that. And like I said, I redshirted, and I ended up talking to the SID, Matt Burson, who was gracious enough to give me an opportunity, and right on cue, a Thompson brother hits a home run.
That.
So that's pretty cool.
Santa Margarita, yeah.
he did that to us. Plenty familiar with that from high school, from Trace. But knowing him personally, he's one of the nicest kids all around.
And
it makes it that much easier to root for a kid like that. But
for sure.
Just going back to the injury, it was, I think, maybe a little too much throwing. Like I said, towards the latter part of my playing days, it was a two-way guy, so taking pregame every day and then, you know, maybe not starting defensively or in the lineup, but then would have to then go warm up.
Right.
I was used kind of as like a lefty specialist or a guy that could...
You were a loogie?
Or a guy that could throw, you know, every day. So it was basically getting hot almost every game.
Nice. Nice.
But I mean, that's not a bad problem to have.
No, I guess it means that somebody trusts you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
For sure. Here with Seth Smith, and we're talking a little baseball. So, growing up in Southern California, I'd imagine Orange County, probably an Angels fan, maybe a Dodger fan.
Definitely an Angels. My family and my grandparents have had season seats, and I've been fortunate enough to be going to games for as long as I could remember. Packing the station wagon with my grandparents and going with my cousins, and from barely walking days till now.
Okay.
So that I'm a huge Angel fan, but not limited just to the Angels. I've also grown up huge Cubs fan. Coming home from school, nothing else is on TV. Of course, little kid, I was
WGN.
Wanting to watch. Yep, I was wanting to watch baseball. So Cubs would be on. I was able to watch all the time. I've been to Wrigley a number of times now, and my uncle lives out in Chicago, so little ties there, but it's been a fun season these last couple of years, but before that, yeah.
Nice, very good. I haven't ever been to Wrigley. That's one of my, I think I've been to about half maybe. I did a big East Coast road trip one time and checked out a lot of the stadiums on the East Coast, but haven't been. To the kind of Midwest is my gap right now. Fly into Chicago maybe and do like the Kansas City, Detroit, do some kind of a loop, Minnesota. I don't know.
Yeah, no.
It's in my head somewhere. I just don't know how exactly to execute it. Anyway, so I wanted to also get into how people can hear you on the radio or on the internet, basically, right? Because you're broadcasting all the games on the internet.
Yep.
And they're live streaming, which is pretty cool, considering the age of Sin Scheimer and how much you guys go through to get that game on the web for people to be able to listen to. So, you know, if you're on the way to the stadium, you know, that's what iPhones are for, guys. And you can get it out. And how do people actually listen to you on there?
Yeah, no, that's technology has come a long way, and we run it through Ustream is the program, but if you visit bluesbaseball.com, there's a link right there on the homepage. You can click it; it'll take you right to our page.
Yeah.
We do apologize if there ever is any technical difficulties. It's just kind of comes with the territory. But yeah, we will be covering road and home games all season long. So I think it's 44 games in total, 34 of them will be at Sin Scheimer.
Yeah. Which makes sense when you think about the fact that no other place actually draws in a league like this, or in a climate like this, where, you know, why wouldn't you have the games actually in front of fans and in front of stadium, you know, in a big stadium and so forth.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can ask the opposing team. I think they'll probably agree that it's well worth the 2-hour, 3-hour, 4-hour drive, however long it takes to get there to come up here and play the Blues. And just, like I said, kind of go through that experience of just playing in front of crowds, making it, you know, that much more enjoyable.
What's your understanding of, like, the team roster? Is it different this weekend than it was last weekend significantly?
I haven't heard much for the going into this weekend, but I do know over this past weekend it was, hey, you got a new player here. Hey, got two more players here. So it was, they're still
and
definitely
some of these
adding.
Guys are like high school kids, right, who just finished high school, their first, you know, just finished their senior year. I guess they're still in high school technically.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they're 18 and they're playing, or some of them, you know, our local JUCO kids I know too sometimes.
Yeah, no, they're getting a chance to kind of fill in. But I mean, that doesn't mean if they play really well and some of these new kids come in that they can't stick around.
Right.
So we saw a number of guys kind of get a chance, and some of them thrived. They did really well. And
is there anybody in particular who?
The Mitch Gallagher, the shortstop. We didn't see him on the I didn't see him on the official roster, but he came in defensively. He didn't start the first couple of games, but came in, played great defensively, and then at the plate, I think he already has 3 or 4 hits on the year.
Okay.
So just the unexpected guys, as well as pitching as well. Guys have come in. The bullpen and the whole pitching staff had a, I think, sub-2 ERA throughout the 4 games, and going into that fourth game, they had only given up, I think, 14 hits or something like that. So,
well, I love the Harley Faye story, right? Is like last year, you know, he's kind of here maybe for a little bit. Maybe he was going to stay, maybe not. He was just kind of like here while other guys were getting here. And then hits a walk-off grand slam, I think, was it opening night or on one of those
first series.
And hung around for the rest of the summer and is back now and playing third base instead of the outfield, too, which is kind of cool to see. So
he actually got on the mound.
Did he really?
I don't know if it was the last game of the series or the third game of the series, but I was told that he, I think he goes to Hendricks, Arkansas College.
Yeah.
But I was told he had threw a little bit there, and he was lights out in the innings that he worked. He's kind of got that Arrieta-type finish where his front foot lands and he throws across his body.
Right.
And he was spotting up, and I mean, in his first outing, he looked pretty good. So he's off to a good start at the plate and pitching.
Yeah, there's nothing like summer baseball. There's nothing like, you know, wood bat stuff, you know, the crack of the bat, all those things. You know, in terms of baseball itself, you have also mentioned UC San Diego, and of course I'm a UCSD grad and have written some about their recent Division I vote. What are your thoughts on that as somebody who's kind of around college sports? It did seem to me like UCSD was kind of, I don't want to say too big for D2, but that's kind of where they were. And I think it's a totally appropriate move when you compare them to UC Riverside and UC Irvine, et cetera.
Oh, yeah. No, they are ready and have been waiting for this for a long time is the feeling that I've gotten. I've worked there the past 2 years and have been lucky enough to be around the whole staff, and they couldn't be any more happy. I think this is the third try trying to go D1, and finally they got the student vote to do it, but they're plenty ready as far as an administration and staff. That part of it is completely ready to go, and their facilities and the work that they put into it was just uncomparable to kind of these other Division II teams. But it was, I feel like, a long time coming for them, and it kind of helps academically as well. I mean, they were in a conference where nothing but Cal States, and nothing to take away from that, but it could be a little easier academically to get into Cal State as opposed to trying to get a player into UC. And, you know, that can go a long way into recruiting, which is, it makes it that much more impressive with what they've been able to do over there at UC San Diego. So it's been fun to be a part of it. I was the men's and women's PA announcer, and man, those Spirit Knights, they got upwards of 4,000, close to 5,000 for those games.
Yeah, so this brings up actually a question that I have, and since you're there for all the games, I'll ask you. One thing that I wrote columns about it in 2002 in the paper at UCSD was this concept of like Spirit Night, and I was always so like wide-eyed at Spirit Night, like, oh my gosh, this is, as the Cubs just keep hitting home runs against Julio Urias, poor guy.
Back to back.
Yeah, Hayward and Bryant. I mean, the Cubs are really good, but man, it's brutal. The wind's probably blowing out. I mean, that was gone probably either way.
Yeah.
Cal Poly actually played Chris. Whoa, is that going on the scoreboard?
Oh,
yeah, totally hit off.
Wow.
Oh my gosh, that's wild. He hit the heck
out. Schwarber had to get up for that one.
The Spirit Night concept, this is making for a great podcast. The Spirit Night concept was always great to me. Like, there's all these people there. They're all pumped about sports. And then it would be like on a Friday, and it would be like on a Thursday or Friday, and the next game would be Saturday or Sunday. And it'd be like back to like 200 people at the game or something. And that was always like the brutal thing for me, is like, oh man, is this ever a thing that can sustain? People have told me that it's improved. I mean, has that part of it kind of gotten a little bit better?
It has. I will say my first year, I was right there with you. Like, oh my gosh, you know, we went the whole beginning of the season and was like, oh, you know, they get a good crowd. And then Spirit Night, like you said, was a whole nother level.
Right.
And you wonder, I mean, you got to think they had a good time. The team put a good show on, so I think it's
maybe, they always played like 10 points better on Spirit Night.
Oh yeah,
always.
And everyone was into it. They do all the halftime with the different colleges within UCSD.
Right.
But it was, I think it's sustainable because just in the long run, throughout the whole year, they get a decent amount of fans to show up. So, it's it's something that I believe now, especially with maybe having the momentum of moving to D1, that they can maybe carry into the rest of their year and seasons. I mean, all their sports, soccer would get a good crowd. Basketball gets a good crowd. Yep. Baseball was always crowded.
Yep.
So I think, especially with these bigger type schools coming in, you know, maybe some people don't know Cal State San Bernardino or, you know, something like that. But now with UCI coming in or Cal State Fullerton, it's just going to make it that much more enjoyable.
And that's all, like, you know, if they get into the Big West and so forth, and that's all kind of like the this one's for you, Big West people. We know it's not a done deal yet. But we're all hoping.
Yeah. Have you heard if it's not the Big West, where they might go?
Well, they have to get a conference invitation, and there's not a lot of other conferences that make a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
The Big West just makes too much sense to me to not have it be the case. But
especially,
again,
I mean, you mentioned UCR, a bunch of other UCs in there.
Santa Barbara, Davis, exactly. Riverside, and Irvine are all in that conference, along with Cal Poly, which is super high academics. And then you have like CSUN, Fullerton, and Long Beach State.
I think, and is UCI probably the farthest south?
Hawaii.
I mean, oh, okay, and Hawaii, I forgot about that.
So UCI and Riverside are kind of the farthest south, and then Davis is the farthest north, but Davis and Cal Poly are kind of outliers. Santa Barbara, I didn't say either, I don't think. So, you know, Cal Poly and UCSB have a nice little travel partner. Davis and, you know, Davis doesn't really have one, and with an odd number, the concept of travel partners isn't really still even there in the Big West right now. You know, an even number of 10 teams just makes so much sense to me. And I know there's issues around it, but, you know, in terms of money and how do you share, you know, costs for different things. And, you know, I get that there's financial stuff about it, but from a pure fan perspective,
someone's got to make it happen.
And UCSD is ready for it. And I think they're going to contribute more than people give them credit for, especially if they can build a tradition pretty quickly in sports. In sports like basketball and baseball, I think they're pretty ripe to be able to like build traditions in those sports really quick.
Yeah, no, I think athletically they can match up, maybe not with the top teams just yet, but I mean, hanging around in the middle of the pack for sure, maybe even surprising some teams and sneaking up to the top in some sports, but like I said, being around some of the major sports that I was, I think they can hang just fine.
And facilities-wise, they're good. It's something I went over with Ken Gross. You know, REMAX, great. The new baseball facility's awesome. Softball looks great. You know, the soccer, they have that huge slab over there that I picture they still probably do soccer games at. But there's plenty of, it fits plenty of people for the Big West. I mean, it's not like it's Cal Poly where they're going to bring in 10,000 people for a men's game or something. But, you know, for most of the Big West, I'm sure, you know, they do just fine. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. No, and being from Orange County, going to Fullerton games my whole life, going to UCI, stuff like that, can't hit on it enough. They're ready for the transition. And I think the players are eager to kind of get going in it as well. I don't know how the transition period works as far as when they start playing.
It's a couple years. So like basically they'll start to play like a transitional schedule. I think they'd kind of just not be in a conference for a couple of years, or they would, you know, who knows how quickly the Big West moves on things.
Is it just D1 opponents only, or are they still
maybe play? I think they probably do some kind of
San
a mix.
Marcos?
I think they do probably some kind of a mix for a while, and then, you know,
fill a schedule.
Maybe for a year, right? They kind of mix a schedule, and then they play. My understanding, and gosh, I'm putting this out there, but you could ask, you know, people at UCSD or in the Big West if UCSD actually goes to the Big West, which I'm hoping happens, which makes a lot of sense.
Did we say that?
I know they'll appreciate me saying those things, but my understanding is that, you know, there's like a transitional period, and they play a schedule that might be like a Big West schedule in that transition year, kind of like everybody in the Big West schedules them for a game or a couple of games, or maybe they go to every other Big West school for a year just to, like, you know,
get
their feet
their
wet
belt.
Right, and then like, you know, maybe once they get into the Big West, they're ineligible for the tournament for a year or two or something like that. For a number of years, you know, or you know, don't receive Big West TV money. You know, there's like there's lots of things that the Big West could put on them in terms of you know, for the first few years to make sure that they're coming in and kind of so that they have to pay their dues, I guess.
Yeah.
And also because honestly, as teams are transitioning, maybe they're, you know, maybe they still have a lot of D2 level players.
Yeah.
That you'll play games against them. It doesn't help those teams in the short term, especially for like basketball, if they're trying to get two bids for a basketball conference, which they haven't been really close to the last few years, but they have a number of teams who play schedules that if they, like Long Beach plays like the toughest schedule in the country, Cal Poly's played a, you know, top 30 or 40 schedule a number of the last few years, UCSB always plays a really good schedule. Some of those top teams, Irvine, some of those top teams do play a really tough Division I schedule. If they could get three or four upsets and have a really great team, and then they lose in the championship game, that's your recipe. But playing UCSD, for example, instead of another school like, you know, I don't know what, UCLA, that they could have got on their schedule, you know, that definitely doesn't help their cause in that direction.
Yeah.
And if you know, with a 10th team in the conference, you have to play those conference teams. That said, maybe UCSD gets really good really quick and is another, you know, is another quality opponent. So there's kind of a short-term and a long-term thing there.
Yeah. I kind of went through a little bit of the transition stuff being at San Marcos. They went from NAIA to now Division II.
Right.
And they're now in the CCAA.
Right.
So they're playing the scheduling, but they're not able to qualify for postseason play.
Yeah.
I think as they finish up there, I think it was a 3-year transition period.
Right. And UCSD was in Division III my freshman year and moved to D2 my sophomore year at there, 99 to 2000. Or I guess it was 99-2000 and 2000-2001. But I don't think there was like a huge transition there. I think there was like a short transition. I think 3-2 is a little bit of a shorter transition.
Yeah.
But to think that they went from Division III to Division I and maybe, you know, under 20 years is kind of cool to think about for sure. All right. Well, I know we got to wrap up. I know you got some things. I got some things. But if people want to listen, they can go to the Blues website. I think is it bluesbaseball.com?
Yeah, go to bluesbaseball.com. The link will be right there on the homepage. Just go ahead and click that. You can actually go back and watch games that have already been previously played. So if you missed this weekend and want to see a hit-a-thon and run-a-thon, go ahead and check
or
out
an exciting
Blues
game from what Saturday night was.
Yeah, they walked it off on a wild pitch. They scored 3 runs in the bottom of the ninth. So
yeah.
Go and check that out, bluesbaseball.com. Follow the link, and we'll have every game, all 44 games this year, live for you right there on Ustream. So
and you can listen to Seth on the Ustream feed. And are you on Twitter or Facebook? Like,
some
social media going?
Yeah, I got a YouTube channel. Sports Broadcasting Network is on YouTube. I have Twitter at Cougar Voice.
So Sports Broadcasting Network is you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's stuff from when I was just getting started to a few other things. But, yeah, there's highlight tapes on there. There's demos. There's games. All kinds of stuff. So.
Okay.
But yeah, my Twitter handle at Cougar Voice. Go ahead and give me a follow.
Because San Marcos is the Cougars.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cougar Voice. Explain that.
not Cuesta, but kind of like Cuesta. Yeah. The Cougars. Okay. Good.
So, but yeah, go ahead, check it out. Let me know. Would love to hear some feedback. Open to any sort of critique, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Talk to Seth. He's at all the games.
Yeah.
He'll tell you what's going on. He'll probably even look at Twitter during the games. He's really good, guys. And you know, I guess I just got a chance to sit up there and listen to you for a few innings the other day, but really liked what I heard. And keep it up and have a great summer in San Luis.
I appreciate that very much, Owen. And again, thank you very much for giving me the chance and allowing me to come on here, stuff like that. Would love to do it again anytime
that
you want to. So
yeah, maybe towards the end of the season or something, we'll do it again.
Catch back up. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Seth.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Ooh.
the signs out on the street.